I could have made an experimental film about him or made it more niche because he talks in riddles, but I really wanted people who didn't know him could be introduced and understand what this was about and that they're not turned off and be like, this is so weird, like I don't relate to it.
So, Jenny, these days within the video consortium and the majority, I'm sure, of our listeners, so many are working on their first feature films, which is, as we all know, a gargantuan mountain that each person needs to climb, and it is not easy. And that is why I'm especially excited about the interview that you did for today's episode.
Yeah, so today's guest, Amanda Kim, just premiered her first feature documentary, Moon is the Oldest TV, which is about the video artist Nam June Park. And Amanda, like I'm sure many of our listeners, started out in the journalism world. She was working for Vice for many years as a producer and just had this curiosity about this video artist who she really admired and who's also from a Korean-American background like her. And she started working on a film about him on the side, and it's a terrific film. It premiered at Sundance this year. So kind of an ideal outcome for any first-time filmmaker, honestly.
Yeah.
She was able to bring an amazing team on board, too. Like, she has some really impressive executive producers and producers on board, and you know, as a first-time filmmaker, finishing a film is impressive in itself, but also curating this team and getting it into this prestigious festival and, you know, now it's having a actual, like, theatrical release is really impressive. And so we talk about how she was able to build those relationships and gain that trust from her collaborators and from her subjects as someone who doesn't have experience making a film before. We also talk about her creative process because the film is largely made up of archival footage, and so how she was able to like craft a narrative with that footage and also secure the rights to the footage in the first place. So anyone making an archival heavy film, I think will get a lot out of this conversation.
That's fabulous. So much amazing stuff there to learn and glean. And then on the other side of this, just to note that for folks who are listening, I mean, we're in this industry in video journalism and documentary specifically because we all believe in the power of video specifically, right? Not necessarily words, not necessarily stills, but video itself to make a big difference for those who absorb them. And so not only is this conversation awesome in terms of learning about how Amanda made her film, but the film itself is so up all of our alleys for all of us who are listening.
Absolutely. Yeah. And anyone who has the chance to see it in theaters definitely should. I know it was playing at Film Forum. It may not be out by the time this episode is out, but I'm sure that it'll have some kind of distribution deal coming down the line. So with that, this is my conversation with Amanda Kim, and you're listening to Rough Cut.
Here we go.
One question I'm sure that you've gotten a lot on the festival circuit is, what made you want to make a film about this artist? Like, what drew you to the story?
I think firstly, his art drew me. That was the first thing that brought me to Nam June. I saw TV Buddha a couple years ago. For those who don't know, it's a Buddha looking at itself through a television in a closed circuit, like surveillance camera loop. It was really funny and spiritual. It felt like deep and like comedic and also like selfies and the world we're living in today. There's something really interesting by the juxtaposition of ideas in this one piece. And so I started researching him a bit further, and I was surprised there wasn't a documentary about him. Like, he's, you know, a pioneer of video art, and he's also endlessly interesting. Like, the more footage I watched of him, I thought he was so charming, and the way he spoke, like, he's so funny, but actually what he's saying is so deep. And his personality and his art like continued to interest me for the 5 years that I was making it. It kept me going. So, and I also thought like, it was really interesting that the story was told today, because a lot of what he was talking about was the internet. You know, he coined the term electronic superhighway, which Al Gore used later in the Clinton administration in the 90s to describe the internet. And Nam June coined that word in the 70s. And he was seeing how we would be interconnected through screens and how these communication technologies would continue to evolve. And so it just felt crazy that people of my generation like didn't know about him and where this all came from.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a big story and so relevant to today. And I know your background, like you were at Vice and your background sort of in the journalism world, this is your first feature. How did you even start this project? It just feels like such a big subject to take on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I didn't go to film school or anything, but I just learned everything about production through my time at Vice. I started in like branded content, so they kind of just threw me in the deep end. You know, you sink or swim. I learned about production through that and started making more like short form stuff. And I was particularly doing like fashion, art, subculture related stuff. And then I worked at Viceland, the television station, coming up with pilot ideas and just like filming every day, like new things that could potentially go on television. So at Vice, you know, there's a very specific Vice style and I kind of wanted to explore my own style. And so I left Vice and I just took on freelance work to pay the bills. But in the meantime, I knew that I wanted to try making a documentary of my own, but I didn't know what subject. And then I came across TV Buddha and it just came naturally. I'm a crazy researcher. So I get into these crazy like research K-holes and like just I can't stop. And so that was like, you know, 6 months to 8 months of just like pure research. And I put like a treatment together and I was talking to my friend David Koh, who's both a sales agent and a producer, and he's a producer on this film. And he knew Nam June personally and he said it was a bucket list project of his, but he wasn't sure yet like what kind of traction it could get and how we could get money for it. So he told me like to make this treatment and develop it further. And he like started kind of showing it around as he was talking to other people about other projects. So that's really the seed of it. And then Jennifer Stockman came on quite early and she, you know, was connected to the Guggenheim. She was the former president of the Guggenheim. And it was like a perfect match that she also made the film The Price of Everything. So she was just both film producer and in the art world. And I think that was also an advantage to this film is that, you know, there was like two different cultural sectors that I could like both find financing and partners for, which a lot of other films might not have.
Yeah, I mean, getting people on board, it sounds like that was like a pretty seamless process for you. Like your friend was also a producer who produced films about artists. As a first-time filmmaker, how did you convince people to be a part of this project and like trust you as a filmmaker when you didn't have that track record? Obviously, you worked at Vice and did great work there, but I think that's a big challenge for a lot of our listeners who are working on their first project is like, how do you get people to come on board and trust your vision?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely difficult and it's a long process. I think firstly, you have to find that one like right partner. I think that's really important because then that person has other people who trust them and then they're like you're vouched for and then you find other partners. So that was really helpful having David and Jennifer. And then also, I think you have to be a little bit not delusional, but like you really have to believe that you're going to do it. It's really hard. So you just have to keep going even when other people say no and being able to really speak about it confidently when you go into a room. I had to do a lot of pitching. Resources that are really great are like IDFA Forum. I went there in 2019. You go to these spaces. I think CPH Docs has a great forum as well where you apply and then if you get selected, you can go and pitch in front of a bunch of different networks around the world and streamers and distributors and whatnot and co-producers. We also had a Korean co-producer who I found there and she brought in like Korean funding. And so I think just to think about all the different ways in which you can get funding sources, you can get really creative with it. You know, if you're doing a science film, there are specific science avenues you can go and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good advice. You know, as a first-time filmmaker, what were your biggest challenges making this film? It could be anything like creative or funding or, you know, any part of the process that was particularly a challenge.
There are many technological challenges, actually, which is really funny for this project about the potential failures of technology. I kind of felt like Nam June was haunting the project and like everything would break all the time. And I think one of the things that happened, yeah, was during COVID, I just couldn't film, and all of the people that I interviewed were quite old. And so we tried to create this like remote contraption in the form of like a Pickian camera setup where I could remote, but like see through the camera. I think a lot of people were trying to figure this out at the same time, but it was pretty pricey, but we were trying to do it for budget. And so that was like a really crazy obstacle. Like, how do you keep the production going? Then I also incorporated Zooms, and I just got like, it made it the film actually more interesting ultimately. I think that was one big thing. And then, yeah, the other thing is, yeah, finding financing. Even though Namjoon's such a compelling subject and seems so relevant today, like there hasn't been a documentary about him and he's not around today. Finding the archival was really difficult because it was scattered all over the globe in like 5 to 6 different languages. These tapes are old. People haven't, you know, really been conserving them in a lot of places. Like, how do you get a hold of that? So there was like endless challenges like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's such an archival driven film. And I assume that that's just the fraction of what you had. Where did you find it? Did you work with his estate? Was that a big part of the budget? If you could just talk about the process of finding the archival.
So the estate had all of his artworks and they're housed at EAI, Electronic Arts Intermix. So that was a great resource. So any of his video works that you see, those were from the estate and EAI. In terms of like more intimate footage of him just in front of the camera and whatnot, like those were not owned by Namjoon. Those were like friends or just people who were around at the time filming. That stuff was what was very hard to track down. And that's the stuff I really wanted to find. And that was kind of a crazy, endless, long process and was ongoing for, you know, the 4 years. Even while we were editing, I was still finding more and more stuff. I worked with archival producer Wyatt Stone. And as I said, I love research. So I would find a bunch of weird stuff and just like rip it online. Wyatt would have to retroactively find the owner of it. And then we also, through friends of friends, as I was interviewing people, they were like, oh, so-and-so was at that event. Like, you should reach out to that person. Just like a network. That was really cool. Like, it was like a treasure hunt. And also a lot of times it's really difficult to find. It's in their warehouse somewhere and they haven't even touched it in ages. And so like building a relationship with these people was also very important. You know, I would be on Zoom constantly talking to people, or if they were in New York, I'd even go to their house. And like that, I think, is a huge thing for anyone who is trying to get this started. Like, if you don't have a budget and you're trying to do a lot of things on your own, the number one thing is like access, right? So like you want to build trust with your subject.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that you went into this film having an idea of like the themes you wanted to hit and the narrative. Were you specifically searching and using archival to shape your idea of what this film was, or were you using the archival to figure out what the narrative was in this film?
So I had an idea that I wanted to explore because Namjoon, like I went through so many of his writings and I could make a series about Namjoon. He's so interesting and he covers like every topic possible that's relevant today. But I think for me, the core of the film was really about how these communication technologies are going to continue to evolve. And Namjoon was trying to push us to think ahead and outside of the box in the ways that we use these things. And I think that was always the message. And then once I got the archival, the way in which we told that story shifted depending on what was available. But because I used his writings and Steven Yeun reads them, I knew what the general through line would be.
Did you watch through all of the archival yourself, or did you have someone on your team kind of like filter it out?
No, our team was quite small, the archival team, so I watched everything myself.
What was it like working with Namjoon's estate? What was that relationship like?
The estate is definitely, you know, really private. And so, you know, that was also about relationship building and trust. And I got to work closely with Kenzo, who's also an artist, and he's the grandnephew of Namjoon. And so, you know, we built a close relationship, and I think that was super helpful. Also, he's an artist himself, so he was very respectful of me as an artist making this film. He was very supportive of actually the film that I was trying to make. So that was really great. But in order to even get to that point, to have the first conversation, that was definitely a long journey, because I think, you know, there have been a lot of situations where, you know, Namjoon's work apparently in the past were ripped off, or there's been like drama when Namjoon was alive that they were definitely more closed off to an idea of a film. And it was kind of like perfect timing and also relationships that allowed me to make this film.
What was your approach to like telling the story that people already know about Namjoon and also introducing audiences to something new? Like, what were you thinking about in terms of a balance between those two things?
The first thing that was really important to me was introducing Namjoon to a wider audience. Everyone knows who Namjoon is in the art world specifically, but even outside, just in the creative industries, I noticed like my husband didn't know who Namjoon was, and he's a film producer, you know? So even people in the arts didn't know who he was. And I think it was really important for me. The story was accessible. I could have made an experimental film about him or made it more niche because he talks in riddles, but I really wanted people who didn't know him could be introduced and understand what this was about, and like that they're not turned off and be like, this is so weird. Like, I don't relate to it.
Can you talk about how you brought on executive producers? I mean, there's quite a few EPs on this film and they're pretty big names. At what point in the process did they come on, and what did they bring to the project?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I have a really great list of EPs. And I think part of that also was my relationship with Kenzo. Kenzo knew Fab, knew Steven, and he believed in the project and he brought these people on. And also because Fab knew Namjoon and was a big fan of his work and connected the dots between the estate and our team. And so he was a super significant part of the project. Like, without him, I wouldn't have been able to get in touch with the estate. So that was key. And then Steven was a huge fan of Namjoon. June's work. And, you know, when we had these endless Zooms where we would just have conversations about what attracted us to Namjoon's work and person, and how he really related also just to the identity of Namjoon, where he's like hard to categorize and he's not from here nor there. And he's kind of this like placeless person. And I think like Steven's own connection to the story really moved me and was very similar to my connection. And so as like itinerant Koreans, and so it made sense that he would read the writings. And yeah, he was very down from the beginning and really trusted me. That was like a dream come true. And then all the others, like through the different amazing people that I had, you get more and more amazing people to come on board and snowball.
That's awesome. So your film premiered at Sundance. As we've said, you're a first-time filmmaker. This is obviously your first film at Sundance. Did you go into Sundance with like a strategy or certain goals you were trying to hit?
I didn't go in with strategy. I was excited to be there and I was nervous about, you know, premiering it and the reception. And I just wanted to show it to as many people as possible. And that was really my intention, and to also try and enjoy it.
That's totally valid and great. Where can audiences or where can listeners watch it?
It's actually showing in Copenhagen next week, CPH Docs. And then it will premiere theatrically at Film Forum soon, March 24th. And then it will also premiere theatrically in London, early May. And it's also going to be on American Masters starting in May. And then hopefully coming to a streamer near you, TVC.
Thank you so much, Amanda.
Thank you so much, Jenny.
Rough Cuts, hosted and produced by Jenny Butler and Sky Dylan Robbins. Abby Kittengore, Amy DiGiacomo, and Kaylee Fox Shannon are our booking producers. Audrey Horowitz is our editor, and our original music is by Zach Wright.
And this podcast is part of the Video Consortium, a global nonprofit media org that connects the world's nonfiction filmmakers and video journalists to tell bold stories that catalyze positive change. You can become a member and join our global community of nonfiction storytellers at videoconsortium.org.
And if you like the show, you can follow us on Instagram at @roughcutpodcast, or leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
These are nonprofit endeavors with a mission to democratize the industry playing field for all. So if you want to support VC and this podcast, we would love if you'd head to videoconsortium.org to donate.
Thanks for listening, and see you next time.